Ocelli Effect.
I'm a big fan of the show.
Chuck Ocelli, and he's been known for many years as a blind JFK researcher specializing in intelligence agency involvement in multiple assassinations, propaganda, and other global criminal operations in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Your listeners are extremely fortunate to have you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media.
Chuck O'Kelly!
March 8, 2019, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, this indeed is the O'Kelly Effect, broadcast live from the facilities of O'Kelly.com, but also heard in a variety of other places, especially if you're catching it further on down the stream via your Fondle Slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher du jour, etc. Do appreciate you no matter how and when you're listening to the show, and thanks for joining us. So, it is a Friars Day night, and this is a fascinating show I think we're about to have. And not that it has anything to do with me at all. It has to do with my guest. Now, Robert Morrow is with me tonight, and this has already become a topic of conversation among regular listeners and other guests on the show. A lot of people sending me messages, are you really going to have Robert Morrow on? And then some people who listen to the show sending me messages, which Robert Morrow is it? Is it the Texas Republican? Is it the author? Is it the guy who bought Mannlicher Carcano's that were allegedly supposed to go to Oswald in some other book earlier on because there was another Robert Morrow who was an author? Is it this guy? Is it that guy? Is it the guy who wrote with Roger Stone? You know what? We're going to find out all about that, and I think you're going to be surprised at the conversation we're going to have, especially because we are suspending the discussion on the JFK assassination tonight. We may touch on it briefly. But I did tell Mr. Morrow off air, full disclosure, that I will at some point do a 2-hour show with him and discuss the concept of the LBJ as the mastermind in the JFK assassination, which anybody who listens to my show knows I don't agree with. But you know what? I always say that I'm open to new evidence. And if there is something new that I don't know about, I would be more than happy to alter my opinions, my views. And maybe, you never know, maybe I would jump on that train if somebody's got the right ticket. But like I said, that's being put aside tonight. Robert Morrow is with me, and we're going to talk about some of those things that I mentioned in the intro. But first, let's straighten out who we're talking about. First, Bob, Robert, sorry, I called you Bob. I don't know why. I don't know you that well, but Mr. Morrow, how are you? And next, we got to figure out which Robert Morrow you are. So can you help us do that? And like I say, first off, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm down here in Austin, Texas. We had a little cold spell a few days ago, and it looks like springtime is starting on March the 8th in Austin, Texas.
You know, I'm in Georgia, so that's late. You know what I mean? It's been warm here, so go ahead.
we've had some very moderate weather for about 2 months. It was almost like spring come January, but we had a little freeze come by. I'm a big gardener. Many folks don't know that. I garden a lot when I'm not doing political research. So we're about to hit the sweet spot of spring coming up here in Austin.
Excellent. So I got Robert Morrow, the gardener. Oh, that's a miscalculation on my part. No, it's not. You know what? Some of us do more than what it is we're known for and what it is people think we're known for. So
yep.
That's an interesting point right there. I didn't know that about you at all, by the way, and I have read about you and even and even heard about you over the years, and never heard that particular thing that you're into gardening, that you're an agriculturally minded individual. So,
I do share busty lingerie and bikini pics as well.
Nice.
On the internet.
Nice. That's always fun, you know. And look, it's not like, you know, there isn't a serious need for that because nobody else does that. That I'm dumb. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm like a human Instagram, but go ahead.
No, that's beautiful. I love this. And here's the thing. I did not realize that I was going to get a guy who had kind of a light attitude, given the stories told, given the fact that maybe, just maybe, this is the guy who worked with Roger Stone at one point. I wasn't expecting a sense of humor. You know, I mean, I figure Roger's parents had a sense of humor, but But you know, the people that work with them, not always. A lot of times those are some intense individuals that I've dealt with over the years on occasion, and I have not been happy dealing with them. So I didn't expect a guy with a sense of humor, and you do have one. But let's get to the nitty gritty about why it is I want to talk to you, because, but it is of interest to me that you're a gardener. You know, let's talk about which Robert Morrow you are, because like I said, there was the guy with the Mannlicher Carcano story. What was the name of that book? I forget. It was a white book with red lettering, and it was so bad, I just can't recall the title, but I know I read it many years ago.
You're talking about Robert D. Morrow, and First-Hand Knowledge was one book, and then he wrote another book called The Senator Must Die about the RFK assassination.
Right.
Most people that I respect don't really respect Robert D. Morrow. They kind of think he either made up the whole thing or at least made up half of his book. But he is right. There was definitely a high-level conspiracy going on in the JFK assassination. I'll give him that much.
No, absolutely true, and I certainly was thinking of First-Hand Knowledge, which is that book with the white book with the red lettering. But it was pretty bad, quite honestly. And I'm not sure, again, how much of it is fabricated, but I'm willing to throw my money on all of it. It was really that bad, the descriptions and things that were in there. But he did have the right idea in that there was certainly a high-level conspiracy that caused the public execution of our 35th president there on the streets of Dallas, Texas in 1963. I give him that. But other than that, I don't give him much. Now, meanwhile, are you related to him in any way?
Well, I'm sure if we have the same last name, Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, we're probably cousins to some degree, but I'm unaware of any close kinship. I guess we're all kin, right? We all came from Africa millenniums ago.
Mm. At some point, I can see that. So, but no direct, like, you know, yeah, he's my uncle or he's my cousin or...
No close kinship at all to Robert D. Morrow. I'm a different Robert Morrow.
Fair enough. Plus Robert D. Morrow's been dead, at least 2 decades? So
he died in the late 1990s, yes. Yeah. So thankfully, I'm not him. Yes.
There you go. And, you know, if I was talking to you, well, headline news around the world if you were Robert D. Morrow because you've been dead 20 years. So, no, that's not you. But when it comes to being the politician in Texas or being Roger Stone's co-author, at least according to the book jacket, you know, you never know what that actually means, because sometimes that means the co-author is actually the author, and sometimes that means, well, the co-author is just there out of consideration.
It does. I was the actual author of at least 85% of the material in our book, The Clintons War on Women.
Mm. Which I did interview Roger about on this show. It's his only appearance on the show, which, if you noticed in the intro, you hear Roger saying, I'm a big fan of the show. That's literally taken from that interview. And I put it there ironically because, you know, again, the only thing I really respected about Roger is the fact that he didn't go out and say, look, I'm an innocent man all the time, or at least that's not what he used to do. So I found it fascinating that, you know, dirty tricks. Yep, that's what I do. Of course I dig in the dirt. And of course I am here to try and bring down this one and that one. And it, like, basically making no bones about the fact that he was a political operative and that quite honestly, he had his own agenda that was not necessarily part of the mainstream agenda or even the libertarian agenda or whatever it is that, you know, what was the name of that party when he helped out Sharpton? I forget. But, hey, you know, across the map, he's a political operative who is there to rake the muck, so to speak, and he doesn't apologize for it. So, therefore, I had respect for that. And I'm no fan of the Clintons in any way, shape, or form, so I was happy to go through that book and talk about things like Danny Williams and a bunch of issues that needed to be brought up as far as
I'm
concerned.
Well, sure, let's interject real quick. Danny Williams is Bill Clinton's only child on Earth. It's his abandoned son with a Little Rock, Arkansas street hooker named Bobby N. Williams, and Danny Williams is in his mid-30s now. I think he was born in the year 1985. So I guess he'd be 34 years old right now. Mm-hmm. And Bill Clinton has not even shook his hand or talked to him or gone to his birthday or done anything for him. So that's worth talking about, because the mainstream media will not talk about that, but it's true.
That's right. And I found that, and I wanted to, you know, stick Roger on that subject for about 15 minutes at least to make sure that people heard and understood that that was the truth. Now, you said it's not his only child, you know, it's his only child on earth. Well, that's kind of fascinating because a lot of people would say, what about Chelsea Clinton? But
Chelsea Clinton is the biological daughter of Webb Hubble, period, end of story. She has big lips just like him. Hillary, do you think Bill Clinton actually, after all of his hundreds of affairs, do you think, actually think he had time for Hillary on his dance card? No, she was not on his dance card. She was his political operative who he was publicly married to. Yes, they used to have sex at one time, maybe 40 years ago at Yale or something, but he was completely disrespecting her in the 70s and late 70s and early 80s, and Hillary was basically dating Webb Hubble, even though he's married, and dating Vince Foster. Vince Foster was really her main squeeze after she had Chelsea with Webb Hubble. And she's also a lesbian. I no need to go into that, except Bill Clinton will tell anybody that who will listen. He told all of his inner circle she's a lesbian, you know. So, again, another incredibly important fact about the Clintons, that Chelsea is not even Bill's daughter, that she's the daughter of Webb Hubble, that Danny Williams is the only son, only child that we know of Bill Clinton on this earth. Again, still covered up by the mainstream media. I'll give you a little bit of a nugget. So Roger Stone used to be very close to Roger Ailes, the former president of Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
So Roger could get himself on TV by doing that, and that's how he got himself coverage for his book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, because he would call up Roger Ailes and say, I'm in Dallas. Can you have the Dallas Fox station cover me? And then, boom, Roger Ailes would make a phone call, and they would cover Roger Stone and his book. And that's what it takes to get on TV in the mainstream media. You literally have to have contacts personally with the media to get covered. And one time Roger was telling Roger Ailes, well, you know, part of our book is going to be that Chelsea is the daughter of Webb Hubble and not Bill Clinton. When Roger Ailes heard that, remember, he's at Fox News. They hate the Clintons. He just said, you cannot put that on the air. If that's in your book, we're not covering it. We're not even going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about Chelsea being the daughter of Webb Hubble. So it just goes to show that, you know, you have the establishment across political spectrums covering up for incredible dirty and unpleasant realities of the political elite.
Well, right, and here's the thing. I make no separation between the Bushes and the Clintons in my mind. I am no fan of either one. I actually feel as though the Clintons are really the poor man's branch of the Bush crime family, as far as I'm concerned. And they are criminals, all of them.
But Chuck, and you say that, but go ahead and tell me why they're criminals. Because go ahead, because I can tell you why are the Bushes criminal. Why are the Clintons criminal? Lay it on me. Tell me.
Oh, man. Listen, we don't want to waste the full 2 hours on this because, quite honestly, let's begin with the wanton destruction of a sovereign nation under false pretenses in Iraq. We'll just start with W. That is a criminal act on a global scale and something that...
Oh, absolutely. Massive. And by the way, the U.S. Congress did not declare war. That's in our Constitution. All right, go on to the next one.
Well, you know, you want to go into Bill Clinton. Listen, you where should we begin? Should we talk about cocaine? Should we talk about the importation into Arkansas?
He was a cocaine addict in the 1990s. The governor of Arkansas was a cocaine addict in the 1980s. This was covered up by the media in the 1992 campaign.
Well, sure.
They wrote all these articles about Bill Clinton doesn't even drink. Oh, bull. Of course he drinks some. Bill Clinton was a cokehead. So Larry Nichols was told by... Betsy Wright, Bill Clinton's chief of staff, that Bill Clinton had to go to drug rehab 4 times while he was governor. 4 times up north. I don't know if it was the Betty Ford Clinic or not, but it was someplace private up north that he had to kind of clean out 4 times for being a cocaine addict. mid-late 80s he was doing this.
Well, there are private institutions up in the Northeast that people don't generally know the name of because they don't need to advertise, quite frankly. And there's also some in Florida that do the same thing. And I've been told that actually he spent time in Connecticut during that time period, but I can't verify it. Anyway, but I agree with you. And who took the bullet for that? That would be Roger Clinton, right? The musician.
Yeah, so Roger Clinton goes to jail for drug running. And by the way, he got a slap on his wrist for the amount of drugs he was running, which is a vast amount of drugs. So Bill Clinton, you know, was involved with the CIA and the Dixie Mafia in the 1980s in the cocaine importation network that was coming into America. When, you know, Nancy Reagan was saying just say no to drugs, the Reagan administration was running a cocaine importation empire to fund the Nicaraguan Contras. People like Bill Clinton had been CIA since 1968. He was recruited at Oxford, and he was the CIA cocaine governor, Democrat, of Arkansas, while the vice president, the former CIA director, was overseeing Iran-Contra, including the drug running that Oliver North was involved in, Jeb Bush was involved in, Bill Clinton was involved in, George Herbert Walker Bush was involved in, and numerous other associates of these people were involved in the drug trade of the 1980s. As
right.
you know, Chuck,
which
is covered up.
Oh,
that's covered up by the mainstream media today.
Absolutely. I've had Ricky Ross and Celly Castillo on this program discussing exactly that thing, which, by the way, nobody else has ever put them on one show together, but I did. Because I wanted to go from both aspects here. I mean, you got the DEA okay. agent who's being betrayed and hung
yes.
out to dry by his own people and being allowed to get hit, basically, because there was a hit. There was a price on his head, and they hung him out there to get hit. That would be Celly Castillo, and a lot of his friends died. Now, of course, this is a guy who honestly believed in good government, and maybe I'm here to actually fight the drug war instead of the war of drugs. He thought he was a war on drugs, his mistake, but Ricky Ross couldn't sell the cocaine fast enough that he was getting from the CIA. And honestly, there is your bridge between Billy and Poppy. And,
yes,
well,
yes,
it goes further than that, though, because, hey, you know, let's go to his daddy, too. And I do mean H.W. Bush's daddy. Prescott Bush, I mean, this guy trading with the enemies, for God's sake. You know, you want to go into that? You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Well, you know, you're talking about Prescott Bush, I think, was involved with Union Bank, which is an American pro-Nazi bank that got taken under U.S. government control during World War II. You know, Prescott Bush and, of course, Joe Kennedy, the father of JFK, were both pro-Nazi, pro-Germans, you know, and not really for the U.S. ever in World War II. And by the way, I would not have entered World War II if I would have had the choice, but that's either near or there. But back to the 80s, you're talking about Celly Castillo. He was a DEA agent working in Central America. He went up to Vice President George Bush at an embassy party one time and says, Vice President Bush, the Contras, they're running cocaine out of Ilopango Air Force Base in El Salvador. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And Bush looked at him, gave him a sickly little smile, and then just turned his back to him and walked away. Like, I didn't want to hear that.
Right. And Celly told that, you know, told that story on this show, by the way. And, you know, people were amazed at that, but it's the truth. And he's told that story over and over again. The book by Celly Castillo, if you want to read about it, is called Powder Burns, but Celly's a great guy still, there in Texas today, actually very near the border, living after he was convicted on a bogus gun charge. But anyway.
Yep.
You know, just keeping up with everything. Let's not leave Iran-Contra alone because, you know, if drug running was all there was, quite honestly, I wouldn't necessarily be too upset about it, except that the people allegedly fighting the drug war are actually dealing and selling the drugs to us on the streets here so that we can be captured in their little web. Let's leave that alone for a second. Let's take a look at all the other things that came out of that too. The death squads, the interesting, you know, adventures in interfering with governments in Central and South America, the still as yet unnamed and uncounted bodies that were, you know, created as a result. And, you know, lo and behold, there are even people that tell me that a guy named Petraeus might have been down there at that time. And some of the very same people took some of the same methodologies that were utilized by the death squads, you know, the School of the Americas and all that good stuff that nobody really wants to touch upon. And they took it and adapted it to the war on terror. and brought the torture methods and brought the crowd control methods and the populist control and terrorization methods over to places like Iraq, where they put a media blackout on what really happened there during the invasion that, as I said before, was the wanton destruction of a sovereign nation under false pretenses. And here's the fun part. You know, the whole idea about weapons of mass destruction. You know, here's the fun part. Oh, we didn't find them. Where are they? It's a big joke. Yeah, they found them, and it wasn't too hard to find because they were the very same people that provided them to them years earlier. It wasn't like you had a factory there. This stuff was sold to them by, you know, groups that happened to make money, and that where did that money go? Into the Bush crime family. So every time you dig and you peel away a layer, you're going to find that some of these people who seem to be in opposition to one another are actually working on the same team, and it is not your team. So it's just that simple. I mean, I'm just giving you the world view here, the way I see it and why I say Bush crime family. Am I tracking okay as far as you're concerned so far?
Well, yeah, you haven't even touched it, though. George W. Walker Bush... Well, actually, you have touched on it. You have, but there's a lot more. Remember, he's the son of Prescott Bush. Prescott was a friend of guess who? Lyndon Johnson. Prescott was also a really good friend of Allen Dulles. You know, the first, I mean, the early CIA director, longtime CIA director, who I think was involved in the JFK assassination. I think LBJ was, too, as well. So George W. Walker Bush was CIA before the Bay of Pigs in 1961. He helped organize that. He helped facilitate that. He was an operative, a businessman in Texas, but yet a CIA operative. And then you get to 1963, and I personally do not think that George W. Walker Bush was involved in the JFK assassination, but he darn sure knows who did it. His boys in the CIA did it, and in my opinion, Lyndon Johnson did it. If you're Texas Oil CIA, you're dirty when it comes to the JFK assassination. Then we get to 1980, the Reagan administration, Reagan campaign made a dirty deal with the Iranians not to release the hostages before the election. That is yet another massive historical truth that the bipartisan mainstream media, left wing, right wing, will not talk about. You know, when they're too busy giving George Herbert Walker Bush a $1 billion funeral, they forgot to forget that he was involved in that treason. Mm-hmm. And that The deal with the Iranians in 1980, Chuck, that was the early seeds of Iran-Contra for the rest of the 80s. That got the ball rolling.
You know, that's true. And I had, Barbara Honegger, I mean, say what you will about her, but she definitely discussed this on the show as well. And I mention it all the time. And quite frankly, look, this may not be a popular opinion with you or anybody else. I don't care. This is the way I see it. I think Jimmy Carter did not realize exactly what level of evil he had gotten himself involved with, and that's why he only got one term and was undermined. You know, I mean, when you try and put Stansfield Turner at the head of the CIA, you obviously are not there to keep the good old boy network going. Okay, so I think he misunderstood his own position. He thought he actually had some power. You know, that was what the problem was.
Well, he fired a bunch of CIA operatives, and they all went to work for the George Bush campaign for president in 1980, 2 years later. And one of Bush's speechwriters was Ted Shackley. That's a guy who has had a long history of running assassinations in Central and Latin America, who was working out of the Miami JM Wave Station decades before. So Ted Shackley goes to work for George Bush. Very dirty guy.
Yeah, so a quick question has come in from the chat room really fast, and I'm just going to pass it over to you. We're not going to linger on this subject too long, but I want to make it real clear about what it is I think about the political establishment in general, because as far as I'm concerned, left wing, right wing, it's part of the same turkey. Anyways, see, this is where I'm a weird guy, but Robert, so, you know, stick with me. But the question here is, did Prescott Bush actually bring about Nixon is the question. I guess, you know, what the meaning is here is, you know, is Prescott Bush responsible for the resurrection of Richard Nixon's political career?
No, I think they mean the original Richard Nixon in 19, 45, 46 when he first ran for Congress. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're talking about. And I've heard that before, too. I just haven't read enough on Nixon to know about that, but I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Prescott Bush was one of the early people behind Richard Nixon in the 1940s. So I don't know. I can be educated on this matter, though.
Yeah, you know what? I must admit that, yeah, I know that there was some connection there when he was running for Congress and all that. And I am familiar with some of this, but not adequately enough to really speak on it. I would say that it is rather fascinating what happened to Nixon, because I still contend, even though I'm not saying Nixon was a good guy, I'm not saying that he was not part of the establishment, but he was part of the establishment that got a spanking. And the spanking was that CIA operatives had gone in, you know, people that instruct people on how to do black bag jobs can't pull off a burglary all of a sudden. It seems like that was sabotage from the CIA directly, because he had challenged Dick Helms. I think that's what happened there, and it was too soon to put a bullet in another president. I mean, that would have been just a little too suspicious. Even
well, you're talking about Watergate, and you're saying the
yes.
CIA helped take down Richard Nixon, which I'm not going to get into a fight over that. I have a hard time believing that because, well, we'll skip that. I mean, do they want to get rid of Nixon and get George McGovern in 1972? That's the question I ask people.
Well, no, that's but in 72, Nixon was reelected, even with the scandal beginning to emerge, which...
Well, remember, the Watergate break-in occurred in June of 1972, and it was completely botched. And some people think the CIA was intentionally botching it so they would get caught, so it would blow back on Richard Nixon as a way of taking him down. So let's not get too deep on that, because, you know, we may not agree on that one.
Well, I'm just telling you that... Listen, this is how I view it. We'll suspend that conversation for now, though, because I've got a lot of things to get into with you. And not the least of which is, since we brought up Nixon anyway, and we're not going to discuss him, let's talk about a guy who worked for him. I think you know where we're going.
Roger Stone.
Yeah, and, you know, yep. Roger, interesting character. But
yeah, okay, yeah. So you're saying, what do I know about Roger Stone? Would that be a question?
Well, the question is this. First of all, you seem a little odd for the guy that would really work closely with Roger Stone, because generally, I don't find you to be a sycophantic guy, and I don't find you to be looking for combat in a conversation. At least with my experiences with talking to you, you're not looking to fight with me. Most of the people that have worked with Stone are very abrasive, very nasty, that I've encountered over time. How did you end up working with this guy?
Because well, you're correct. I'm not as sycophantic as Roger Stone is. So I met Roger Stone originally in the summer of 2013 because I heard he was writing a book on the JFK assassination that was going to indict Lyndon Johnson in it. And the reason he's doing that is because Richard Nixon was telling Roger Stone in his retirement, when Stone would quiz him, basically that Lyndon Johnson was behind the JFK assassination. And then Roger would press him even further, like, well, you know, be more specific. And then Nixon would just shiver and say, Texas, you know, meaning the powerful people of Texas who were donors to both Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, those people were behind the JFK assassination. So I started sending Roger Stone my JFK research. I met him over Twitter, and then I started emailing to, you know, Stone at StoneZone.com my JFK research, and he immediately saw it was quality, and he gave me a phone call. And I think, you know, he said, maybe you can help me with my book. And I said, well, of course I'd be glad to. That's what I do, you know. So I flew down to Miami to both meet him, and I was also meeting a friend of mine, Scott Kaiser, who has very close connections to the anti-Castro inner circle of Miami, like the inner circle, the old hardcore Castro haters. Scott Kaiser knows personally, okay, because his dad, Edwin Kaiser, was their buddy and their friend.
Also a former guest on this show, Scott Kaiser. Go ahead.
Yes. And so when I was down there with Scott Kaiser, I actually met Luis Posada. Now, some of you people who are listening know exactly who Luis Posada is. He's a Cuban, anti-Castro Cuban terrorist that blew up an airplane and murdered the Cuban fencing team.
Right.
And his co-criminal, Orlando Bosch, got pardoned by George Walker Bush at the behest of Jeb Bush. It just shows you how down and dirty the Bush family is, okay? They're pardoning or commuting the sentence, really, commuting the sentence of a mass murderer, Orlando Bosch. So when I was down there with Scott Kaiser, you know, I just kind of broke off and then had a dinner with Roger Stone at a Cuban restaurant, and it went well. And so this was in the summer. This was in the summer of 2013. From that point on, I was helping him with his book and giving him research on the JFK assassination. I was Roger Stone's Sherpa through JFK research.
Well, that begins to make some sense. Now, I think that he also must have tried to talk to Barr McClellan, who I don't take very seriously, quite frankly. But, you know, Barr McClellan's got a lot of great ideas, but not much to back them up is the problem.
Okay, all right. Well, we do have to talk about this. Barr's a friend of mine. Barr is incredibly important, not because his book is accurate or because when he wrote his book, he really didn't understand JFK research. Do you understand that? Meaning he wasn't schooled in it like some people who've been doing it for decades. He just knew that he worked at a law firm, Clark Thomas Winters, and the principals of that law firm, this was LBJ's law firm, were telling him Ed Clark and LBJ killed John Kennedy. And they were very just matter-of-fact about it.
Right.
And their names were Ed Clark, who was an incredible power broker in Texas, every bit as powerful as LBJ. He's telling Barr, I killed Kennedy. I'm getting a free oil lease out of this. Take care of the paperwork. Don Thomas, also a principal, I don't know if you know who Don Thomas is. You need to know who Don Thomas was, because Don Thomas was one of the absolute closest people to Lyndon Johnson for 30 years. He was a financial advisor for the Johnson family for over 30 years until the early 1990s. So close that he was even embezzling from them in the early 1990s. And the daughters wanted to take him to court, but Lady Bird knew that he knew too many dirty secrets on LBJ, and she refused to let him do that. So Don Thomas was also saying, well, I took care of the ballot stuffing down in Jim Wells County in 48, and as for Dallas, Clark took care of that. So that's two prominent law partners at this firm, very high-level people, extremely close to Lyndon Johnson, who were bragging to Barr, we killed Kennedy, okay? So that's why he's important. It's not because his book is accurate. You know, Barr, you know, had no idea that Lee Harvey Oswald was an operative, a CIA operative, an FBI informer, that he wasn't a communist. You know, he just kind of makes this thing called faction in his book. The Malcolm Wallace fingerprint match may or may not be legit. It's very controversial. The Murchison party that Madeleine Brown talks about never occurred. But Barr knows one thing. People close to LBJ were telling him that Ed Clark and Lyndon Johnson were involved in the JFK assassination. That's why Barr's important.
Okay, listen, I grant you that. But here's what the problem is. He had advisors on that book that were ready to help him and assist him that have a great deal of knowledge. The guy who I think has the most general knowledge on the case in general was there with him trying to help him. And
you mean Walt Brown?
Yeah.
I disagree. I know more about the JFK assassination than Walt Brown does.
I will respectfully disagree with you there.
You can't. Well, see, the problem is he micro-focuses on, like, the Warren Report. Like, who cares? That's a product of J. Edgar Hoover and Alan Dulles and LBJ, the folks who killed John Kennedy and covered it up. Okay, there's 50 years of JFK research that have absolutely nothing to do with a micro-analysis of the machine gun riddled Warren Report, which is what Walt specializes in. But God bless him, you know, he is useful.
Well, it's just, you know, I've actually gone through the chronology and all that, which goes well beyond the Warren Commission report. But I'm just saying, it seems to me as though he had an advisor there who could have helped him with a lot of stuff that was, you know, first of all, he's got the wrong time of day for the assassination just in the book. That's one thing.
Really? Like what time?
I forget what the discrepancy is, but it's like, okay, it's just,
I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
But what I'm saying is he
took many factual inaccuracies. But here's the key thing I'm trying to tell you. He knew people who were friends with Lyndon Johnson for 30 years, and they were telling him, we killed Kennedy. That's important. That in and of itself is important. Now, is there a videotape of Ed Clark saying that? No. Is there a videotape of Don Thomas saying that? No. But factually speaking, Barr McClellan knew these people very well. People who were very, very close to LBJ. Whenever LBJ would come down to Texas and come to Austin, the first person he would see when he'd get to town would be Ed Clark and Tom Miller, the mayor of Austin. That's how close Ed Clark was to LBJ. As far as Don Thomas, if you look through his presidential schedule, you'll see Don Thomas at all of these impersonal close moments, like they're on the same helicopter on New Year's Eve on 12/31/63. Don Thomas is on there. Don Thomas was like the right-hand man financial advisor to Lyndon Johnson. So he's telling Barr, we killed Kennedy. Now, do we have videotape proof of that? No. But Barr says that. I believe Barr. I don't hold Barr to being an expert on the rest of the JFK assassination because he's not.
Mm-hmm. No, fair enough. Fair enough. And like I say, I will leave it at that. But it's just his book is not a useful thing. The idea that
if you throw out three people at Lyndon Johnson's law firm telling him that Ed Clark and LBJ were involved in JFK assassination, then I guess it has no use at all. But see, it's this thing called throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Consider much of his book bathwater. But he gets the psychology of LBJ spot on. He was there long enough to hear anecdotes about Lyndon Johnson blowing up a stray dog when he was a teenager, enough to hear anecdotes about LBJ beating a horse to death and making it drink water and then kept hitting it and hitting it till it died. See, he knows how sadistic LBJ was. He knows that he was just a lying, mean, sadistic, vicious person. And he knew people who knew him for 30 years. No. Well, I rest my case.
No, listen, I don't argue with the fact that LBJ should be described as a sociopath. And just those examples you just gave is enough. But,
I'm not
but it
disagreeing
goes way beyond
with,
that.
I'm not disagreeing with the factual inaccuracies that are all throughout his book. Barr's book. We will agree to that, okay?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But listen, this is why I have these discussions, man. I air these things out. I'm not afraid to sit here and tell you, look, this is what I think, this is why, and listen to what you have to say as well. But let's continue on with some other subjects because, again, we could get bogged down in the JFK thing for the rest of the time.
So let's go back to Roger Stone, shall we?
Please.
Shall I tell you? Okay, all right. So, you know, many folks want to know about what's Roger Stone really like, okay? Roger Stone is funny. He's charming. He's intelligent to a certain degree. He loves political gossip. I mean, he's totally addicted to political gossip, meaning who did what to who, what year, you know, what fundraiser did this. Who's screwing who? Who's a lesbian? Like he was telling me that Condoleezza Rice and Donna Brazile were lesbian lovers, and I would keep asking him, are you sure? Yes. Roger, are you sure Condi Rice and Donna Brazile are lesbian lovers? He would say, yes, definitely, definitely. And he would tell me about Britt Hume and Megyn Kelly having an affair at Fox. This is all important stuff to know because when you find out who's having sex with who, you learn a lot about them. You learn who's compromised. You learn who is a sexual psychopath, like Donald Trump is, and like Bill Clinton is, and like JFK was, and like Lyndon Johnson was, all sexual psychopaths. And if they're sexual psychopaths, they're probably psychopaths in other parts of their life. So Roger Stone would be, he hates the Bushes, because he was a Reagan guy back in 1980. And he was getting delegates for Ronald Reagan in the state of New York and doing a very good job at it. And so good of a job that when he first met Barbara Bush, she said to Roger Stone, I hate you. Because he was kicking their butt up in the Northeast. You know, where the Bushes come from, you know, Reagan was winning because of Roger Stone's efforts. Mm-hmm. So Roger Stone told me that when he was with the Reagan campaign in 1980, he was tasked to chumming up to the Trump family, Fred Trump, Donald Trump, to Roy Cohn. If you know anything about Roy Cohn, an absolutely notorious lawyer who was an absolute mortal enemy of Robert Kennedy, total enemy, just like LBJ was, just like Jimmy Hoffa was, enemy to the Kennedys.
right? Which also ties right back around, just coincidentally, ties right back around to Nixon and all of that, too.
And Trump. Remember, Roy Cohn was there advising Trump in this period, and that's when Roger Stone met him. So they all knew each other back at that time. Roy Cohn, you know, a sociopath, Roger Stone, a sociopath, Donald Trump.
Roy Cohn, viciously attacking people as a lawyer for being communists and all this other stuff, and quite frankly, ranting and raving about who is actually a homosexual when he was a closeted homosexual himself.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He was a master blackmailer of pedophilia.
Roy Cohn was.
So anyhow, but here's the important thing. Roy Cohn and Fat Tony Salerno, the Genovese family, the front man for the Genovese family in 1980, were telling Roger Stone LBJ killed JFK. And they weren't just like BS, and they were like, as a matter of factly saying, oh yeah, Johnson killed him and the mob. Johnson and the CIA, Lyndon Johnson killed John Kennedy. Now this is coming from Roy Cohn, who absolutely hates the guts of John and Robert Kennedy, their mortal enemy. And that's who he thought killed John Kennedy. So that's important. And that's why Roger Stone's book is important, because people like Richard Nixon knew it, meaning that Lyndon Johnson was involved. Roy Cohn knew it. Fat Tony Salerno knew it. When Roger Stone went on his book tour promoting his book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, which I do recommend, he ran into a nephew of William Casey, the former CIA director, you know, Reagan's campaign manager, longtime CIA guy. And he says, Roger, I asked the old man, meaning Casey one time, you know, who really killed JFK? And he said to me, Lyndon Johnson had his fingers in the soup bowl. That's coming from Reagan's campaign manager, William Casey, CIA director William Casey, one of the founders of the magazine, The National Review, William Casey. One of the other founders of the National Review is a guy you know, William F. Buckley, who was a personal friend of E. Howard Hunt, and working for the CIA down in Mexico. So that's another guy who I think was involved in the JFK assassination, who also indicts Lyndon Johnson. E. Howard Hunt does. So you have all these CIA people at the National Review who know the truth. Maybe Buckley didn't, but Casey did. Yet they're going to push the Lyndon Review to this day over there.
Well, let me give you a little bit of insight on something, because I spent time researching, deep research on a bunch of different issues related to the Kennedy assassination. When you bring up Tony Salerno and his claims, okay, it's kind of interesting. There's a reason why Northeast Italian businessmen would make such a statement at that time. And he's not the only one who made that sort of statement. I'll tell you why. Because at this point, there was a finger being pointed at them.
Okay. around 1980 or so?
Yeah, and the thing is, from the Gambino to the Genovese to here's how I know it, because I actually was sent to interview some of these guys, some of them in prison, I got on lists, you name it, in order to do this, because certain people that wrote books were too afraid to do so. And I grew up in such a way that I was at a nexus of criminal organizations as a child, so I had access to people. Now, here's the thing. The reason why they were bringing it up is because there were all sorts of claims about them possibly helping to move gunmen around, them maybe even being directly involved as mechanics here, literally employed hitmen that would have been passable in Lily White, Texas, because, you know, not every Sicilian is dark-skinned, you understand.
Sure.
You know, so there was all sorts of things going on there, and quite frankly, there sort of emerged a party line among certain people in the underworld, quite frankly, that stated, look, you know, what we need to tell you is anybody but us did this, because...
No. Fat Tony wasn't telling Roger Stone the mafia was not involved. He was admitting mafia involvement. How about them apples?
Well...
You can read Roger Stone's book.
I'll have to take
they
a look at
that. They were taking credit for it. But they were taking credit for it, but they were also putting LBJ in the mix. I personally am not a big believer in the mafia and the JFK assassination. I'm on the Lyndon Johnson, CIA, Lansdale, military intelligence, the Texas wealthy. That's where I'm at. But, you know.
No, I understand.
They certainly hated candy enough, right?
But oh no, they did. But people that worked with, you know, the old mustaches, so to speak, would readily admit to me that there was absolutely no reason for them to do it, because where's the money? And it wasn't going to be the kind of money they were going to be able to walk away with. This is literally what was said to me about this. You know, use your own reasoning. Why would I allow this to go on? It would not be one of these, you know, well-organized groups that would have been involved in it. Now, could the CIA hire criminals? Yeah. Could they hire guys like us? Sure, they could. But they had to provide assurances. And in this case, there would have been no assurances. You know, like with the Cuba thing. They did provide assurances, okay? And right. There's a lot of people that were never prosecuted for all sorts of wonderful things, and a lot of deals that were cut in order to make that happen where, yeah, the Italians were definitely involved in the subversion of Cuba. And more than one family, and by the way, some families whose names you never hear were right. involved there. But the thing is Salerno, you know what, again, he's an odd duck, and
well, I mean, I'm not vouching for him. I'm just saying, I'm not even vouching for Roger Stone. But Roger Stone was telling me that Fat Tony Salerno and Roy Cohn both were telling him LBJ did it, and Salerno was saying the mob did it too, and I think they were saying the CIA did it as well. They were throwing them all in there in a mix. So take that for what it's worth. It may not be worth anything, but so shall we continue with Roger Stone?
No, absolutely, but I just wanted to note that really quickly, that I had actually interviewed some of these people myself. I mean, I didn't speak to Tony Salerno directly, but some of these other guys, by the time the 90s rolled around, I was speaking to their sons, I was speaking to the people that worked with them, if they were dead already, and I was speaking to the actual guys. But anyways, it's one of those interesting things where, look, I got nothing to lose at this point, and I can tell you this, and I can tell you that, and I can also tell you that sometimes guys make claims, you got to remember, and this is true, honestly, quite true, with my experiences with these guys, is that sometimes there are larger claims made than they have poles
to
go fishing
for. They like to expand themselves, mm-hmm. You know? We did it. We killed everybody.
Oh, yeah. You name it. It's anybody who died, if they slipped on a piece of soap in their shower, you can guarantee there was an Italian who put the soap there, you know? Like that
it's
kind
of
mentality.
Part of the legend of being, you know, the mafia.
Right. So let's continue on with Roger Stone, though, because this is a guy who is not mafia. I mean, interesting the way he dresses and all that, I got to say. But I
didn't leave out one thing about Roger Stone when I was describing him. He's also a pathological liar. Okay, what do I mean by that? Of course, he will tell the truth. If he finds dirt on a political opponent, he will use it if it's truthful, right? But if it's not truthful, he'll just make it up, or he'll lie about himself, or he'll lie about Donald Trump. He has this sick addiction to lying that if you go to his Wikipedia page, I think he started lying in first grade when he told everybody to vote for John Kennedy for president, because Richard Nixon is going to make you go to school on Saturday. And the class ended up voting for Kennedy, and Roger Stone saw then the power that a well-told lie can have.
Now, just in fairness, I did an entire 2 hours tracing, and that's where we started, was with that story. And we went through his entire career, so to speak, in public, and his deceptions, twisting of information, you know, everything from that to Willie Horton to Donald Trump, basically in 2 hours as fast as we could. And believe me, we could have done another 6 hours on it.
The key takeaway, he's a pathological liar. And then with those people, if they're telling the truth, you're lucky. Like he'll say, I was poisoned by polonium, right when his book is coming out a few years ago. That's just laughable.
Yeah, right.
I was elected the GOP chair of Travis County Republican Party here in Texas. And I trolled him pretty good. And Roger says, I sent out 20,000 Trump Mara robo phone calls. Now, I played along with it at the time because I knew it was a joke, but he's lying. You know, he'll say that Barbara Bush was, you know, cursing, you know, at Jeb's, you know, first campaign rally. He just made it up. Or he'll say, when we got a bunch of one-star reviews on the Clinton's War on Women, he says, Amazon.com has traced where these one-star reviews come from. They come from Hillary's headquarters in Brooklyn. He just made it up. I mean, how many thousands of lies has this sick man told over the decades? He's a very sick man. sick in the head.
But did you know that before you started working with him?
Well, you know, I knew he had a checkered history. I didn't go into all that. I found, you know, that he had, you know, been outed as a swinger who likes to have men have sex with his wife while he's in front of Roger. You know, I found that National Enquirer thing. But at this point, you know, I knew that he knew Lyndon Johnson was behind the JFK assassination, which, in my opinion, he was. And I wanted to help him. And he also hated the Clintons, and that's two pluses. He also hated the Bushes. That was three pluses. Oh, hey, I got a lot in common with this guy. You know, mm-hmm. Also at that time, he was trending libertarians. That's four things. So I figured, you know, let's focus on, you know, what we have in common rather than looking at the red flags that were right in front of my face, you know. Mm. It's like Maya Angelou says, if somebody, you know, shows you who they are, believe them. That's Roger Stone and Trump.
Right. Now, here's an interesting thing about this, because when we look at what's currently happening and the discussion about what did Roger know about WikiLeaks, did he actually make a phone call, did he speak to whoever, I mean, it is impossible to unravel this because, look, Trump's a liar. He's
yep.
a liar. Who
sure.
else we got? I mean, you know what? The girl who was handling the communications, she's not going to tell the truth because she has no idea the flack she's going to take if she does, or maybe she says nothing, which is what I would try to do if I was her, because no matter what you do, you're in trouble. You know, you can never unravel this stuff with guys like this. So when you see the story about Guccifer and was he in contact with WikiLeaks or not, you don't know, quite frankly. I mean, for me on the outside of it, right? And my only interaction with him was, quite frankly, the funniest part about it, just really quickly here, is
yep.
that I told him, look, I only need your audio, and he kept his video on anyway. So myself and my producer got the full-fledged Roger Stone lunging at the camera show that nobody else got to see that night while I'm just talking to him on the air, right? But nobody else got it, and I told him, I don't need your video. Please, you know, shut it off. And, oh, well, I need to test it anyway, he said, or something. I said, okay. And he left it on, and he was just, it was an amazing thing. It was almost like I had the Roger Stone Muppet coming at me on the screen. And you know, like it was that exaggerated, okay? And I find that funny. But the thing is that when you get down to it, sometimes this man will belt out a profound truth, though. And he did it on that show by, I said, look, man, and this is 2015. I said, I think it was, because the Clinton's War on Women was brand new. It was sent to me by the publisher.
Gotcha.
And I think that's 2015, right?
It was published in the fall of 2015, or the general election and the primaries were in 2016, just before all that was occurring.
Right, yeah. So I got them just there, and Trump was still, like, you know, in the field of many Republicans, right? So I said
right.
to him, I said, look, you're a friend of Donald Trump's. Come on, this is a joke, man. This guy can't be for real as a presidential candidate. I mean, I'm from the Northeast. I wouldn't trust this real estate hustler from Queens with a cup of coffee. We're going to give him the POTUS? And I said, this has got to be just a publicity stunt. He can't honestly believe he's going to win, Roger. Come on. And he said, you fail to recognize the size of the ego and narcissism you're dealing with Roger Stone and with Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, yes.
Wow. And that was a profound, clear, clean truth that came right out of his mouth. So it's not like he's incapable of telling the truth. It's just that I don't know what to make of it. Help me out.
Well, Roger, when I met him in 2013, was a man that life had passed him by. He was looking for relevancy. He was looking for his next gig. He was tired of the political campaign scene. He was getting a little bit too old for that. And so he figured he was just going to writing books, you know, and why not get a good start with his LBJ book, which, by the way, I think ended up on the New York Times bestseller list briefly, and this was probably one of his most successful books so far. But he really didn't know that Trump – well, actually, he said, Robert, Trump will say things about the Clintons that no other Republican candidate will, which is true. Mm-hmm. And – that was his excuse for supporting him. He's very sycophantic to Trump, kind of like Jack Valenti was sycophantic to LBJ, kind of like Name some other prominent political sycophants. Maybe James Carville to the Clintons, maybe.
Oh, there you go. There's a perfect example, yeah.
And so for Roger, why he's that way, he becomes a big man by being associated with a big man, kind of like he is a midget attaching himself to, you know, a giant or something.
The perpetual sidekick, if you will. Because
he's
never going to be the man, so he might as well hang around the man, right?
Yeah, so he's very insecure, because you can't be a secure person if you're a pathological liar and if you're a traitor to Donald Trump. You can't be. You have to be a mental, moral, psychological midget to play a role like that. He got kicked out of the Trump campaign, but he probably thought Trump was losing after the fight with Megyn Kelly. And then when Trump started winning in the primaries, Roger's like, oh, he's going to win after all. He's going to be the nominee. So he started, you know, campaigning for Trump. And so the whole campaign in 2016 was Roger on the outside trying to show Donald Trump how important he was, how I'm going to help you win. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm telling you all these secret things you're not supposed to know. Mm. Roger was the one who was managing Danny Williams. Many people don't know that. They were using Danny Williams to depress the black vote with Hillary Clinton, which I support 100% because the Clintons need to be held accountable for abandoning Bill's only son on earth. But Roger was the one in charge of getting that out to the black community to tell them that Bill and Hillary Clinton have abandoned Bill's black son, which is truthful.
Which, by the way, bears a mention here. I'm sorry. I got to interrupt you to say this. It bears mentioning that it's not like this is just an accusation that Bill and Hillary have never heard of, because at one point in time, they used to at least send money to Danny Williams.
Yeah, no, that's critically important. You can go to YouTube and find Larry Patterson being interviewed by Chris Ruddy saying, we, Arkansas State Troopers, were sent by Bill Clinton every Christmas to give Christmas presents to Danny. They would have all these extra Christmas presents being sent to Chelsea, and they would scoop some up and take them to Danny. And also, the state troopers would drop $700 into the mailbox every month into Bobby Ann Williams' home, mm-hmm. where she was living. Until Bill won the presidency, then the payment stopped.
Right.
Deadbeat dad Bill quit paying $700 a month. So Larry Patterson and them used to take it over there and put it in the mailbox, and Danny will tell you that as well. So Bill Clinton thinks Danny is his son because he is his son.
Oh, no, I just wanted to make sure that people understand this is not some far-out, you know, you didn't acknowledge me ever kind of situation. He was acknowledged and then disacknowledged. So I just wanted to make that point real clear, because that's very important, wouldn't you agree?
It's critically important, mm-hmm. and I know you know that, but again, the mainstream media, when I say mainstream media, I mean across the spectrum. MSNBC, CNN, Fox, Wall Street Journal, you name it. They refuse to address the Danny Williams issue. Now, the Daily Beast did one time, but Olivia Nuzzi never pointed out that the Arkansas State Troopers were giving Bobby Ann Williams money. She never pointed that out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and she was stunned to find out that there was a high school that Danny Williams went to that everybody there thought he was Bill Clinton's son. That just blew her mind.
All you got to do is look at the guy, for God's sake. I mean, you know, really, seriously. Matter of fact, listeners, right now, if you're listening to the podcast, go pause my podcast, go to Twitter, and look at Danny Williams on Twitter.
And Facebook, too. But spell it right. His name is spelled D-A-N-N-E-Y Williams. Google him.
Right.
Danny E-Y Williams on Facebook and Twitter. See, Chuck, he's easy to find. Mm-hmm. He's in Little Rock, Arkansas. Do you think any Little Rock, Arkansas TV station or newspaper has ever driven 5 minutes to go talk to Danny and interview him? No.
Nope.
It's controlled. To this day, the sycophantic media in Little Rock, and of course nationally too, just want to ignore the fact that Bill and Hillary Clinton run around the world trying to tell everybody how to live their lives. They want to be king and queen of the world, yet they don't even take care of their own kids.
That's right. No,
Roger was secretly working with Danny Williams to get that story out, to get Danny publicity, to make it an issue in the black community, and it worked. The black vote was definitely depressed for Hillary Clinton.
And you know what? Fair enough. As it should be, because you know what? You hold up a mirror to some of these people. That's what needs to happen. And this is definitely a mirror. And if you don't believe me, like I said, go look at Danny Williams' picture. Cause that is a mirror image. If you're just, you know, make Bill Clinton a little more black, that's Danny Williams, basically. I know that sounds rude to say, but, look at him. That's what he looks like. And if you see a picture of his mother, you can see who his parents are, period.
That's right. Bobby N. Williams and Bill Clinton are the parents of Danny Williams.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, it's not something that you need to be well-trained or even need a DNA test for if you take a look. I mean, I would love to see what a DNA test does, but, you know, there was some difficulty with getting that done. But anyway, there's more to talk about here, and I want to take this break right here because, you know, we're talking about Roger and his involvement in the campaign, and I want to finish on that topic because I have an assertion to make to you, and I want to run it by you and see what you think of it, but regarding Roger. But then I also want to talk about your foray into the political world and find out about how that went because, you know, there was something a little bit beyond the robocalls that Roger allegedly sent out, right? Anyway.
Right.
Wow, that was weird. I had the sound effects cue there, and it came in oddly. But anyway, my guest tonight is Robert Morrow, and this is certainly an interesting conversation here on the Ocelli Effect on a Friday night. Stick around. We'll both be right back.
Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. The brilliant author of The War State brings you exclusive reports about the big changes upcoming in the markets. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and J.P. Sotillion and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Silly.com.
We should learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say our power to the people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media.
Chuck O'Shelley.
Second hour of the O'Shelley Effect begins now here at O'Shelley.com. But, of course, it begins whenever you want it to when you catch the podcast later on. So, for live listeners, before I forget, let me just tell you that the live chat room at O'Shelley.com, not overpopulated or anything. If you want to get in a question for Robert Morrow, feel free to put it in there and help the blind guy out by putting a capital Q in front of your question. However, if you're also connected to me on Twitter, I will monitor my direct messages over there as I do on a lot of nights. And again, if you have a question for Robert Morrow or, well, don't ask me questions because, well, you can, I guess, but we'll both answer them if you want. It doesn't matter. You can direct it to Robert Morrow, please, because, listen, this is the first time he's ever been on here, and we're going to have another conversation, but this one has gone swimmingly, so to speak, so far, which a lot of people did not anticipate. I know Joe in Kentucky says that he is really loving this conversation, and also feels that if he had a disagreement with Mr. Morrow, he feels as though he could, what did he say? Do it peacefully, which is what he appreciates and is a rare thing nowadays. So, yes, Joe, I understand. And this is what's happening here. You hear a couple of disagreements and we're not name calling and we're not screaming at each other. You just hear it go, well, listen, I disagree with you on this and here's what I have to say. And we give each other space and that's that.
Yep.
Gee, that sounds like what, you know, adults are supposed to do. So, Let's go back to the daycare center, though, because I consider the antics of Roger Stone and the antics of Donald Trump, by the way, completely inseparable from one another at this point. Now, why do I say this? We were discussing that when we went to break. The adventures in Roger Stone land, if you will, or in the Stone Zone. You know, and look, you can take some value from some of the things he says and all that, but let me ask you a blunt question to get the ball rolling again. And that is, I have this idea in my mind while observing the behaviors and the media strategy that is being utilized by Donald Trump at this point in time. And I'm not a fan of his, but as you notice, I'm not a fan of any of these people that have, occupied the office in.
Good.
Well, gee, let me see. Ever since they blew the last guy's brains out that I think had a small amount of power in 1963, I figure that we haven't actually had a legitimate president. I give a little bit of the benefit of the doubt to Jimmy Carter. I really do. And I think he got into something he didn't quite understand. But outside of that, there has been nothing but one catastrophe after another, as far as I'm concerned. And people have been in positions where they're supposed to be representing, you know, we the people, and they're not doing it, period. But anyway, as I look at Donald Trump and his media strategy, it seems to me like it is exactly the same as Roger Stone's media strategy in a lot of ways. Now, there were people that used to assert that Karl Rove was George W. Bush's brain, right? Famous documentary. We see the documentary now on Netflix, Get Me Roger Stone, about his involvement in the Donald Trump campaign. But I believe,
speaking of which, mm-hmm. Karl Rove, Donald Trump, and Roger Stone, three people, all of whom are fantastically sexually compromised. We'll get back to that in a second, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, sure, absolutely. But to me, it seems like Donald Trump's brain is probably Roger Stone. When it comes to dealing with the media, It's the same strategy. Deny, deny, dish it off on somebody else, and then when it does turn around, well, they're a liar anyway. I mean, it is precisely the program. I mean, he's even got these rules, Roger Stone, and I swear if anybody in the media would take a look at them and go, this is how Donald Trump is behaving, this is Roger Stone's rules, it looks like the same program, and if not the same program, it's definitely the same school of thought. But I contend that regardless of what his title was, regardless of whether he's got an official advisory position, I feel as though Roger Stone has shaped exactly what it is we're watching unfold right now. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree, but I disagree. Look, Donald Trump was a psychopath before he met Roger Stone. Okay, he was a pathological liar before he met Roger Stone. Roger Stone just amplified those things and gave him some tools to get ahead in the media. Gaslighting, where you just do flat-out lying, no matter what the truth is, no matter if your arm is a foot down in the cookie jar, you swear you're not stealing a cookie. You know, your mom is looking at you, and you're looking up at her, and she's 2 feet away from you. You swear that your arm is not in the cookie jar. That's what Donald Trump does, and that's what Roger Stone does. Right. So I'm not going to say Roger Stone made Donald Trump into a psychopathic cult of personality guy. I think Donald Trump was already that before he met Stone, but Stone helped him get ahead.
Well, that's why I said he molded him, he shaped him, gave him his media strategy. Because Donald Trump's media strategy in, you know, as a real estate hustler was a little different, it seems to me. It seems to me as though he certainly adopted some of those, and you're familiar with the rules, right? You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Well, the rules don't include taking responsibility. It's always never accept the truth, deny, 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 attack, 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 gaslight, gaslight, gaslight. That's it in a nutshell.
Right.
So it's nothing about doing the right thing in the Stone rules. It's all about winning it at any cost. But see, here's the problem with that, Chuck. When a person does that, be they a politician or a political operative, you make so many enemies along the way. Mm-hmm. So even though you're climbing the ladder, you have dozens or hundreds of people who just want to stick a knife in you if it's the last thing that they do because they remember what you did a year ago, 5 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago when you screwed them over. Mm-hmm. You've made an enemy for life. And the problem with that is it ends up catching up with these psychopaths. Not all the time, but often. I mean, you know, Benito Mussolini. Last thing I saw him doing was hanging by his feet upside down dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I think that's what's happening to Roger Stone, but more precisely Donald Trump. You're seeing all the Trumpkins go down and go to jail, but there's a process in play, a legal process, where they're going after his personal business. Well, God knows how many crimes Donald Trump has committed in his personal financial life that he's going to be exposed to after he leaves office.
Right.
He could be dealing with this for the rest of his life. Roger Stone, I mean, look, I'm not friends with Roger Stone. Jerome Corsi, that's another guy who worked with him, total enemy of him. So Roger Stone has a great way of making enemies because of his just psychopathic, sociopathic, pathological, lying, narcissistic behavior. Oh, did I tell you he was having sex with Ann Coulter, Chuck?
Now, there's an interesting allegation because that just sounds crazy to me.
Well, he told me that. He told me that. Granted, he's a pathological liar, but he told me he was having an affair with Ann Coulter. And then he told me she was skinny. He said in a real sickly way, and he quit seeing her. He said, she's skinny. She's skinny.
Well, you know, maybe so. I don't really want to put that. Oh, thanks for the mental imagery. Look, terrible.
He's kind of like me. He likes a girl with some meat on her bone. Okay?
Yeah, brother. Listen, I'm all for that. Exactly. Look, there's another thing you and I have in common. Okay, let's move away from the sickly things for a minute.
I had to get that out there, you know, folks. Roger Stone was telling me that he had an affair with Ann Coulter. Okay, and he quit seeing her because he said she's skinny. And then he also said he had sex with Maureen Dial. She's got big boobs. Years ago. And there's this woman who is the daughter of this supermarket king in New York City that Bill Clinton has his arms around. He looks real creepy. And I think her father is a Greek grocery store owner. I can't tell you the sex act that Roger Stone and this woman participated in, but let's just say, you know, he had a happy ending. I'll leave it at that.
And this is all based on the accounts given to you by Roger Stone.
Roger Stone. Right?
Okay. Just,
yeah,
so.
I mean, he's a, but, you know, I don't see why he'd be lying to me. He used to text me, you know, pictures of his other mistress in New York City. He has, apparently, he has a child with the Manhattan Madam. Is it Kirsten Davis? Is that her name? Kirsten Davis or Kirsten Davis or something like that?
I forget, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so, but he had this other mistress, too, you know, and who was a fitness instructor. And she used to post on Roger Stone's Facebook page, like, stud. You know, and Roger Stone's wife is on his Facebook page, and she has to be seeing the mistress posting there saying, stud, you know. So that's the kind of guy that Roger Stone is.
Right. And, you know, it's really weird, again, because, look, you actually have gotten involved in politics yourself, and I want to turn to that because it seems to me like you're not thrilled with the decadence of what's going on at the slow-motion fall of the Roman Empire here, you know, that seems to be going on. Multiple Caligulas are in play. What is happening here? I don't know, but you were actually a Republican, you know, legit part of the party actually doing stuff in Texas, and, you know, Trump is in your party, and Stone is, you know, supposedly
working for. Well, not only that, the Bushes are in my party, too. That's another gag right there, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Rick Perry's in my party, another gag. So you probably want to ask, what is my political background, okay?
Well, Ted Cruz I'm not a fan of either. There's a guy, which, by the way, just man-to-man, Robert, let me just forget about his policies.
Yep.
Forget about his creepy appearance. Let's put that aside. What kind of a man turns around and then kisses up to the guy who insults his wife and tries to, you know, basically tie him to Lee Harvey Oswald through his dad?
A beta male. A beta male. There's alpha males and there are beta males. Maybe a zeta male.
Ugh.
Z-E-T-A. So,
yes. I mean, you know, because, look, just on a literal just, sorry to go all masculine on everybody here for a second, but, I mean, straight ahead, I would say to the guy, look, I'll work with you, but I owe you a punch in the mouth, and you're getting paid. I mean, at least. And this guy just, I don't know. So I'm saying, and there's another Texas Republican. So, I mean, you're swimming in some dirty water there. And quite frankly, whatever criticism anybody's had of you over the years, you're not one of these guys.
Okay? Yeah, exactly. You know, they'll get on me for being crude and vulgar. Well, at least I'm telling the truth about these bastards. Okay. So we go through my political background so folks can know where I'm coming from. Is that okay?
Yeah, please do, because, you know, on the one hand, you sound libertarian, but on the other hand, Republican. So I'm trying to sort it out because I'm one of these people who the only political party I've ever registered with is libertarian. Outside of that, I did register as an independent. I'm not currently registered to vote, quite honestly, because I'm so depressed with the whole situation. It's so pointless in my mind.
You ought to vote. You ought to vote for any candidate running against Donald Trump in 2020. That'll be a good thing to do.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing that's making me considering going back and registering again. But if I do, it's going to be probably as an independent because I'm fed up with every single one of these alleged parties. But
please tell me
about your point of view, please.
Yeah, so, you know, I am, like many people, they change their politics over time. You know, I used to be a liberal Democrat back in the 1980s when I was in college at Princeton University. I wasn't really a leftist. I was more like a classic liberal, especially on racial issues. Mm-hmm. I was all set to support Joe Biden for president in 1988 because he was really, really good on black-white issues until he blew up his campaign. Then I supported Michael Dukakis. So by 1992, I had switched to the Libertarian Party because, you know, I really hate taxes. In 96, I figured, you know, Libertarians are never going to win, so I'll just vote straight party Republican like I did for Dole, and then even Bush. Remember, in the 1990s, I wasn't politically well-read. I kind of checked out from the politics. And I wasn't reading all the books that you read and I read and your listeners read, all the books on deep politics, all the books that are suppressed that we love to read, that the media loves to not talk about, you know, on all these topics from the JFK assassination to CIA drug smuggling to pedophile rings and so forth.
Well, right. If I had known that, I would not. I mean, the first presidential candidate I ever voted for was named Clinton, and that goes to show you that I was not well-read on these topics. But then again, if you consider that there was not literature out there when Clinton first ran, it wasn't really there. It was really kept very quiet.
Came in 94 with Terry Reed's Compromise. I don't know what year that book came out. Somebody can tell us what year Terry Reed's book, Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA came out, because that's when some major league truth was being told about the bipartisan criminal elite, that they were both running drugs in the 1980s and are both CIA.
Right.
That's a critical book.
But see, Clinton ran in 92. But Clinton ran in 92. So what I'm saying is I didn't even have the chance to pick up on this stuff, even given that I was only 20 years old in 92. But I did.
Right. Well, you have to seek it out. And so in the 1992, another incredibly important book was published, The Franklin Cover-Up, which is about a homosexual pedophile ring being run out of Omaha, Nebraska, which really occurred. And one of their clients was Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush, who was being given teenage boys to have sex with. Okay? That came out in 1992. That's one reason that old man Bush could not use the adultery issue with Bill Clinton, because he was so incredibly compromised himself. Plus, he had a long-term mistress named Jennifer Fitzgerald, that's spelled with a J, J Jennifer, not the G Jennifer of Bill Clinton. Hmm. Hillary Clinton actually told a magazine, "Well, I hear that Bush has his own Jennifer too," she said in a real catty way. It's a shot across the bow, meaning you're not going to talk about Jennifer Flowers, and we're not going to talk about Jennifer Fitzgerald. We'll make a deal with you, old man Bush. So,
yeah, plus nobody wanted to hear about the callboy ring that was totally related to guess who?
Bush. You know, and so it's incredible. The guy that just had a $1 billion funeral, George Walker Bush, was not just a closeted homosexual, which he was, not just a guy who cheated on his wife with women, which he did. He liked to have sex with boys. And how do I know that? Because recently, a longtime gay activist in Houston named Ray Hill died. You can Google him. Ray Hill, Houston gay activist. And he told me that in the late 1960s, he had a friend named John Coyle that owned the Carousel Motel across from the old Gulfgate Mall down in Houston. He said that Congressman George Herbert Walker Bush would often take a Hispanic boy there to sexually molest. And I said, well, Ray, how old was this boy? Because I was trying to figure how old, you know. Was he 17 or 18, or was he 15, 16? And he said, young enough to be called a kid. Mm-hmm. A kid. So old man Bush was homosexual pedophile, like these Catholic priests are pedophiles. And then it got further corroborated with the 1992 book, The Franklin Cover-Up, by John DeCamp, where if you look in the index of that book, George Bush's name is mentioned 15 or 20 times as somebody who's a client of Lawrence E. King, who was the ringleader of that ring. Lawrence E. King was a black Republican high flyer who was buddies with all these very high-level important Republicans, but he was also a pedophilic pimp and a homosexual pimp of boys. And that book was incredibly important, never discussed in the mainstream media, never, ever. But it sold 200,000 copies in the underground of America. Mm.
And I got to tell you that even today, it is difficult to get somebody on to talk about the Franklin cover-up, because the second that it did emerge, and then even 10 years and 15 years later, people were being warned to not follow up on this, to not publicize it. There's an older gentleman who was involved in this, and it's not DeCamp, but it's the other guy who wrote about it as well. And I've tried to contact
him. Nick Bryant?
Yes, sir. I've tried to contact him, and I got an answer back that pretty much was like, I'm getting too old to come out and discuss this anymore. It's too dangerous, basically. And what does that tell you?
I happen to know Nick Bryant, and maybe I could put a plug in for you and see if he will discuss it with you.
Well, I would really appreciate that because I would like to discuss this on air, just frankly, ask questions and go through what it is, the evidence that I know is contained in DeCamp's book, as well as a couple other things, because, you know, there was a film they attempted to make, and I do believe it won.
Conspiracy
film,
of Silence. That you can find it on YouTube. You've got to, folks, you've got to watch that. Conspiracy of Silence on YouTube. And you've got to go to Nick Bryant's webpage, www.franklinscandal.com.
That's right.
And you'll learn about a pedophile ring that was catering to the Republican elite of the 1980s.
You stole the plug right out of my mouth because I was going to tell people to go there and read for themselves what is on the website.
You need to buy Nick's book, too. I mean, I'm plugging Nick's book, if you don't mind. So,
go ahead.
So Nick Bryant wrote a book that should have gotten a Pulitzer, okay? But because people like George W. Walker Bush was involved, remember, that criminal just got a billion-dollar funeral with, like, you know, a flyover of 21 planes at College Station as he was put to rest, and he was laid in the U.S. Capitol, and he was laid out at the St. Martin's Church down in Houston. Then he took his corpse took a train ride from Houston to College Station. Then they had 21 airplanes fly over. By the way, I was protesting his funeral in College Station. How about that? Well, had a big sign that said, George W. Walker Bush murdered Barry Seal February 19th, 1986.
Which is a sign I support you holding up, because, again, another part of the story that's not being told while CNN's running multi-part documentaries on the greatness of the Bush family and the Bush dynasty, and having Bush's grandchildren come out and say, well, now we're going to interview some of the newsmakers that covered our historic family, and how about you interview the people whose families were destroyed by the Bushes? How about you interview some of the individuals who maybe, you know, lost entire sections of their family to death squads in South America? How about you do that and talk about the impact of your family? I'm sorry.
How about you interview the people, the victims of the Franklin pedophile ring that George Bush helped cover up, okay? And he had an attorney general named Richard Thornburg who was also running the cover up.
Yeah, and meanwhile, notice we didn't even bother to mention, you know, the theft that went on with the savings and loan situation, all the other money that was absconded with, the interesting stock trading stuff that went on, you know, during 9/11. Let's not even talk about the mainstream, things that are right there in your face.
Oh, that's very real. Well, the SNL crisis was a bipartisan theft of buying, so you really can't pin one political crime family on that. That was nationwide and done by many, many people.
Oh, absolutely, but you can't deny that the Bushes had a seriously good chunk of a role in leading that. You know,
they had their one of them definitely was on Silverado. They were definitely involved. And also, you mentioned the massive naked short sales of stocks that were going on before 9/11. That is true. That is absolutely true. People don't talk about that much, but you better believe our government knows that, and our Senate Intelligence Committee knows that. And if you had to ask me who was doing that, it was probably wealthy Saudi Arabians who knew that an attack was coming upon America and they knew where it was going to occur. Those were most likely the ones who were making those bets. Those people were sophisticated enough to know how to make these bets. Well, that's who I think was doing that, Saudi Arabians.
In addition to a whole bunch of stuff that was never even properly checked through the SEC, that, because all that had to be suspended based on the disaster, a whole bunch of waiting trades that needed approval just went through, too, and nobody talks about those billions of dollars either, do they? You know, there's a lot to it, by the way. I'm just saying. But look, I don't want to get too far off track, because we were talking about your political life and how you had gone through these things. And, yeah, these were things you didn't necessarily know contemporaneous with the 1990s, because you were sort of checked out. Continues to lead to, and let's be fair, I mean, do at all points in your life, if you're at all points in your life concerned with the dirt and politics and the dirty of the politics, then you're probably Roger Stone. You know, at some point you take a break and you kind of live life. So that happens. Anyway,
okay, latest headline, I'll get to me, but the latest headline from Drudge, Mark Zuckerberg has a secret panic chute leading to car park underneath his Facebook conference room for emergency escapes. The Facebook CEO receives death threats on a weekly basis. well, I'm very sad to see these being receiving death threats, but I'm not really surprised at all, based on all the censorship that's going on Facebook on a regular daily basis. And that's going to, no doubt, make many, many people unhappy. You know, I can't even call Hillary Clinton an angry bull dyke on Facebook without a 30-day suspension. I can't even say stuff like, gee, it sure is crazy that trannies won. A couple of tranny guys won the sprints at the the Connecticut boys-girls relay last year. You know, You get a suspension for saying that.
Oh, and don't say anything about Israel, because if you do that, you also get banned, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just so
you know. You think if they're going to ban the racists on Facebook, like the white nationalists and the Nazis, you ought to ban anybody that has like an Israeli flag as an apartheid state. If you want to be fair, you know, I'm not saying I'm advocating that. I'm just throwing that out there, you know. So about me. So I basically became Republican. Remember, people who listen to this audience, they have a sharp interest in deep politics, okay? Many of your family and friends don't. They're busy raising kids, you know, making a living, living a life. They don't want to devote all the time to reading the stuff that we read, and that's okay. But that means they've signed up to drink the totalitarian propaganda that the mainstream media and even the social media companies want them to be force-fed. Mm-hmm. And so that's their choice, you know, because it takes time to read around. So by the 2000s, 2005, I wanted to stop Hillary Clinton from being president because I'd become a Republican. And I started, you know, I voted for George Bush twice, I'm sorry to say. Because remember, I didn't know, all the stuff I'm telling you right now, I did not know in the year 2000 or 2004, okay? So by 2005, I started buying hundreds of books on the Clintons used from Amazon.com. That's why Amazon, you know, Jeff Bezos is the world's richest man. He helped me out a lot because I could get all these books on the Clintons dirt cheap, used, mailed to me on every topic imaginable.
Yeah, literally at that time, quite honestly, I was expanding my book collection too. And you know why? Because you could literally find books on there for about 10 cents. That if you bought, you know, five or six books from the same place, it would cost you a dollar for the books, and then you paid the shipping, and it was like next to nothing. You ended up with like 10, 12 books delivered to your doorstep.
A gold mine. Yes, but let's talk about how important that was, because back in the old days, you'd have to go to your local bookseller, and you have to check for a book somewhere, and they'd have to order it, and it'd be like 3 weeks before it showed up. It was a much more time-consuming, much more expensive process. It delayed your education.
Right.
What you and I did, we'd order 10 bucks at a pop on Amazon or on any topic. Like, we'll pick Clinton's or JFK assassination. Pick your topic. Order 10 used right off the bat. Not brand new. You order them used.
Right.
And they get to your house within a week, all of them. And you can dive right in there. And then your knowledge grows exponentially. So
exactly.
When I was doing my Oppo research on the Clintons, I started finding just incredibly negative stuff on the Bush. Because if you do that, if you're seriously ordering every book on Bill and Hillary Clinton, you're going to run across CIA drug smuggling. You are. You're going to run across the Bushes. Then you're going to run across the Franklin pedophile ring. You're going to think, Franklin, God, this sounds horrible. You know, a pedophile, this can't be true. I mean, with prominent people, you know, paying a pedophilic pimp to have sex with a 10-year-old boy or a 6-year-old boy or an 18-year-old teenager, you know, mm-hmm. And they're prominent names in this book, the Franklin cover-up, and then you find out it's true over time, it's true, it's a mind blow, and you see how so many things are suppressed in the mainstream media. So my education on the Clintons really turbocharged my education on everything else from the Bushes to the JFK assassination. So I was an anti-Hillary Clinton activist all throughout 2008. I sent out 400,000 robocalls to South Carolina. If you guys can find that on YouTube, you'll get a great laugh. It's Robert Morrow, robocall, South Carolina, 2008 primary. Okay. And then after Hillary lost in 2008, because I was really, you know, secretly, you know, doing anything to stop her in the Democratic primary, and I was also ready to go after her in the general election, too, I started poking around the website, the education forum on the JFK assassination, and I found a link saying that LBJ killed JFK, and the people who were posting on this were very knowledgeable. They were giving quite very good details and very good arguments. So in 15 minutes, I'm like, yep, Johnson did it. You know, here I am. I went to Princeton University. That's the nation's, you know, number one undergraduate history department. It's a top five school. Some say it's a top one school, top two school, top five school in the country. And nobody there, Chuck, taught me anything credible about the JFK assassination in the 1980s, 20 years after JFK had died. All those books had been printed at that time. Nothing credible. Absurd. So I'm trying to tell you how I was progressing along. So at that point, if folks want to know about me, I found a person on that education forum posting named Dawn Meredith of Austin, Texas. And I said, well, this woman lives in my hometown, Dawn Meredith of Austin, Texas. I think I'll just give her a call.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave her a call. This is in 2008 after Hillary had lost, and I'd been campaigning for Ron Paul, and he had lost too. And I said, Dawn, you know, who should I talk to, you know, about the JFK assassination? Give me your top 10 people that you know. And she was a longtime researcher. So she put me in contact with literally the top 10 researchers in the country on the JFK assassination. And by the way, Walt Brown is one of them,
mm-hmm.
or was one of them. And I would call them up, and I would say, hey, I'm new to this. My name's Robert. I'm in Austin. Give me 10 books I should read on the JFK assassination. And so each of these 10 people would give me their top 10 books. How about them apples? So you're getting 10 hardcore experts. They give you their top 10 books. I order every single one of them. So that's a way of turbocharging your education. You know, you get 100 books, or maybe they had a lot of crossover books, so maybe, you know, 60 books come to your house,
right.
And you start reading them, not word for word, but at least flipping through them, reading them, examining them. And that's how I turbocharged my knowledge on the JFK assassination in the period from 2008 to 2010.
Right, and that's an interesting thing. Now, before we're done tonight, I'm also going to mention that, you know, Roger Stone and his interesting foray into this particular subject, it's kind of interesting. We're not going to get away without mentioning Joan Mellon, who I personally know as well, who brought up your name recently in a discussion on the show too. But please continue, with what's going on. I just want to stick a pin in that for later. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, well, I'm just going to skip that and give a plug for Joan Mellon's book. It's really, so we have to do this, okay? Joan Mellon, as you know, has written an incredibly important book on the USS Liberty called Blood in the Water, How the USA and Israel Conspired to Sink an American Ship. And she's written the best book ever on the topic of the USS Liberty, which may have been Lyndon Johnson's greatest crime if you take out Vietnam. It was even bigger than the JFK assassination. And so basically, Lyndon Johnson and Israel were trying to sink an American ship, the USS Liberty, to blame it on Egypt so that the United States would have a pretext to enter the Six-Day War and they could attack and bomb Nasser of Egypt, that's the president of Egypt, who had drifted into the Soviet camp the previous 10 years. That's it in a nutshell.
Right, and I'm actually holding a copy of that right here in my hand, because we've done two shows on this book. Before it even came out, I was doing shows on this book.
I want to support you on that and tell you just how incredibly suppressed this is in the mainstream media. And, you know...
Also, in the literary media, because the people that would normally... Let's be frank here. Regardless of whether you agree with Joan Mellon's conclusions or not, her books are extremely well-written and deeply researched. So,
yeah.
Generally speaking, in legitimate literary circles, people give her reviews in publications that are devoted to reviewing literature. In this case, nobody wants to touch it. Okay, I'm just telling you that right now. Go ahead.
They sure don't, because the Zionists, and I don't mean Jews when I say that, I mean Zionists, both Jewish Zionists and Christian Zionists in America, absolutely dominate the political environment, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a bunker buster bomb thrown in the middle of Zionism. So we had a Zionist country, Israel, trying to murder an entire American ship with the U.S. president totally conspiring with them.
Right.
That is like treason on steroids. It's mass murder.
That's correct.
And so that's, I know we're digressing on John's book, but it's totally incredibly important. So another guy that you should have on when you have time is Jack Staley, whose books is the Gold House Trilogy, which is about Richard Nixon and Lyndon Johnson both stealing billions of dollars in gold from White Sands Missile Range. And we'll talk about that after the show. But I want to alert people to know that, that's another incredibly important story that these mainstream historians on Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, when I say that, I mean like, you know, Doris Kearns Goodwin and Robert Caro and Robert Dallek and the guys that write on Nixon know nothing about, that Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon used the same people separately, LBJ in the year 1969, Richard Nixon in the year 1973, to steal billions of dollars of gold bars from White Sands Missile Testing Range in southern New Mexico. It's a huge, huge story. So we'll skip the rest of my politics. I'm really a libertarian. I really prefer being a political truth teller. You know, I'm not, even though I was elected the Republican chair, I trolled them incredibly because I started telling the truth about all these people and sharing pictures of beautiful busty women and also anime pictures. You know, and just made their heads explode.
Well, of course,
by my behavior and by my truth telling.
Well, but here's the thing about this, right? Just really quick, a couple things. One, I'm not going to be able to talk after the show because I got to jump right over and produce another show.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to do that. But you and I are going to talk off the air, and Jack is going to be on this show at some point. I just got to get around to speaking with him, and fleshing out, because he's got some brand new information that doesn't seem to be anywhere else, and so I want to examine it and bring it forth on the show. So that's going to happen as well. In addition to, you're definitely already invited back because we're going to have the full-on discussion about Lyndon Johnson. But with the last 20 minutes or so or less now, you know, I want to make sure that we cover all these things. And I'm glad that we talked about Joan's book, and I'm glad we talked about your experiences with Roger and all that. But, you know, your behavior as a Republican representative in Texas, I mean, you're telling us you were trolling them. What was the purpose of that exactly? You know, from your own mouth, I want to hear this. I mean, what was the reasoning behind that? I mean, are you as fed up with hypocrisy as I am? And I don't care if it's got an R, a D, or an L in front of it. I don't care if it's Rand Paul or if it's Nancy Pelosi or if it's Donald Trump. I am so sick and tired of these people taking money from anything that is the highest bidder, whether it's a foreign nation or it's a great corporation, okay?
Well, how about murdering people? How about blowing up the Middle East? How about murdering Barry Seal? How about molesting boys and getting away with it and getting billion-dollar funerals? How about being a serial rapist like Bill Clinton? Mm-hmm. And nobody in the media ever calling him on that except Donald Trump when he brings three of his sex victims to the debates. It's far worse than just taking money. These people are criminals. Not all of them, but many of them. The Bushes are criminals. The Clintons are criminals. Donald Trump's a criminal. Richard Nixon should have been thrown in jail. Lyndon Johnson was a spectacular criminal. Right. They're all in touch. They all die, never going to jail, never being indicted, never paying a fine. So.
Well, see, I also contend, but here's the thing, with the hypocrisy, it's kind of funny because Trump brings, you know, hey, here's Clinton's women, where's his? Cause, you know they're out there. I find it funny that this is the guy railing against immigration while I stated on this program years before the MSM finally got a hold of the story. I said, yeah, just go to a Trump property anywhere and tell me that some of those people have all their papers in order. You want to talk about reality.
Okay. As we're finding out the past few weeks is all the illegals get fired. I've been working there for 10 years. They all get fired now.
Yeah, but I told people on this show that was true, and people attacked me as a liar and that I was fantasizing. I said, I'm not fantasizing. I went there and saw it for myself. Go there yourself and see it. I don't say stuff like that definitively, and I do my level best to say, look, you know what? This is an allegation based on something that's heard and based on something somebody said, but there is proof of this that you can go and see for yourself. And when it comes down to it, Trump is a criminal too. And I don't believe for a second, by the way, all this, you know, hullabaloo about Mueller and the investigation and blah, blah, blah. Maybe Roger Stone might go to prison for a little bit because he can't keep his own mouth shut, which is the funniest thing about this, because talk about the gang that can't shoot straight. Nobody can keep their mouth shut over there, okay, which is the prime rule in any criminal organization if you know what you're doing. Keep
Roger
your mouth
thinks
shut.
He's, Roger yeah. thinks he has a pardon in the bag. That's why he's prancing around so cocky.
But what's hilarious is really the upper echelon, the really truly privileged people, they're the ones that are never going to go to prison no matter what they did. When Donald Trump said, I could shoot somebody in the face on Fifth Avenue and kill them in front of everybody, he was telling the truth. Actually, like I said, you know, a pathological liar occasionally gives you a really sharp nugget of truth, and he's right. So I wonder if the hypocrisy on all sides, whether we're talking about, you know, mass murders, whether we're talking about all these sexual deviations while claiming moral superiority, whether we're talking about, you know, killing people over there so that nobody sees it over here, it doesn't matter. Because it's all a game where it's just, you know, one hypocrisy trying to, pardon the phrase, trump another hypocrisy constantly. I mean, is that why you kind of behaved the way you did as somebody in the Republican Party or no?
Well, yes. Now, you've been so hardcore, Chuck. I'm not disagreeing with it. But on a lighter note, people can Google an article about me called The 18 Craziest Tweets by Robert Morrow, newly elected chairman of the Travis County Republican Party. Okay. And you'll hear some of my classic ones. One would be like, here's one I put out. I've been having incredible urges to lick peanut butter off of Hillary Clinton. Does anyone know a doc who specializes in this disorder? And then the opening article, and this is all true, Robert Morrow thinks former Texas Governor Rick Perry is bisexual, that Hillary Clinton is a lesbian, and is fascinated with the penises attached to Bill Clinton and Donald Trump. Yeah, I am fascinated because they keep whipping them out and sexually abusing women with them, okay?
Mm.
So, you know, Rick Perry, our former governor, Republican, who runs around with the Bible and tells everybody to vote for him because he's a Christian, was an absolutely rampaging bisexual adulterer. How do I know that? Because I know strippers here in Austin who gave me the lowdown, shall we say. One of them told me, well, the governor came out to, I went out to the governor's limo, and I tried to play around with him, but he was too coked up to get it up. That's what she told me.
Mm.
This Christian religious right governor is, quote, too coked up to get it up. Hillary Clinton is a lesbian. Hey, Bill Clinton says Hillary's a lesbian, okay? The media just keeps wanting to ignore that. The biggest rumor monger about Hillary Clinton being a lesbian is Bill Clinton. And Bill would say, she's eaten more than I have, and I can't really say what he said.
Ew.
But, you know, she's eaten more than I have, you know? So that's what Bill would tell many people. And then Bill Clinton, you know, sadly, you know, his penis is not exactly presidential. And we know that because he keeps whipping it out in degrading fashions with women like Paula Jones and telling them to kiss it. And she just kind of looks at this little thing, kind of crooked, you know, and tiny and everything, and his face is all red. And she's thinking, you disgust me. And then we have Donald Trump, you know, who is also a rapist as well. He raped his wife, and he raped a 13-year-old girl at a Jeffrey Epstein pedo party. So, you know, when I was elected chair of the Republican Party, I'm like, hey, everybody's fair game now. We're going to do some political truth-telling. I'm going to get my little machine gun out and just spray them all. And that's what I did. And their heads were about to explode.
Yeah, see, now there's another thing is where you get a limited hangout now in the mainstream media about, well, gee, was there a problem with the guy in the Trump administration who cut a sweetheart deal with Jeffrey Epstein? Yeah, there's a problem there, but you guys are ignoring the real banner headline, and it doesn't matter if you're allegedly on the left like MSNBC or if you're allegedly on the right like Fox. Nobody wants to touch it. I mean, I even had the kid on who got manhandled by the by the Secret Service for holding up the you know, who is Jeffrey Epstein sign at Trump's rally.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
I even had him on because I thought that was hilarious.
Okay, well, folks, you need to Google Ann Coulter's latest article on Jeffrey Epstein. She posted it in WorldNet Daily, and she keeps calling it a Democratic scandal. See, Roger Stone and I were educating Ann Coulter and Sean Hannity on the evils of Jeffrey Epstein back in 2015. This is when I did not know that Donald Trump was just a full-on pedophile rapist himself. Okay, I thought it was just Bill Clinton, who'd been on 25 trips with Jeffrey Epstein. Roger and I wanted to use that against Hillary Clinton in 2016. We were lining that. We were educating Ann Coulter and Sean Hannity behind the scenes, okay? Mm-hmm. And so Fox News used to talk a whole lot about Jeffrey Epstein, okay, until Donald Trump becomes the Republican nominee and they figure out that he's been friends with Jeffrey Epstein since the year 1987, and that he used to go to these parties with Epstein and that he was being provided 13- and 12-year-old girls to sexually molest at Jeffrey Epstein parties, and one of them sued him during the 2016 campaign. Her lawsuit was not thrown out. She dropped it a week before the election. Lisa Bloom had her in her clutches. She was going to have a press conference. Lisa Bloom was trying to force a press conference on a woman in her mid-30s who did not want to go, did not want to show her face. She wanted to sue Donald Trump and tell everybody what he did to her, but she did not want to get out there and show her face. For the same reason Mark Zuckerberg is afraid of death threats, except he's a billionaire, and he's got a little escape chute under his conference table, okay? Mm-hmm. This woman does not have an escape chute under her little apartment, okay? And so she dropped her lawsuit. And then the Trump can say, well, it never was true after all. No, it was true. So that's where we're at.
No, that is where we're at. And here's the sad fact. I can name and count on one hand the alternative media people that have been willing to even discuss the Epstein situation in full.
I have to interrupt here.
Most of them I'm associated with, like seriously, even people that are, you know, supposedly outside of the mainstream, not willing to touch it.
No, it's incredibly important. You have to understand this. Jeffrey, can I explain that? We got just a few minutes. I got to be quick here.
Sure.
So in 2014 and 15, the Epstein problem started coming up again because they just won this lawsuit, you know, against the federal government for not informing these victims of their rights when they were making this sweetheart deal, when Alexander Acosta was making this sweetheart deal. So Alan Dershowitz, Epstein's lawyer, was having sex with underage girls, and he denies it. He's a pathological liar. You know, Virginia Roberts has confirmed it. She was the 17-year-old girl that Jeffrey Epstein pandered to Prince Andrew of England. So it got covered up because Prince Andrew was involved in the pedophilia. Alan Dershowitz was involved in the pedophilia. Donald Trump was involved in the pedophilia. Bill Clinton, I don't know if he was involved or not, but he definitely knew what was going on. He definitely knew he had a very sick pervert who specialized in having sex with underage girls as his best friend on 25 plane trips. That's Bill Clinton.
Just for the record, I mean, Alan Dershowitz has sued the hell out of people over this and won, you know, which is really bizarre to me. But, you know,
I don't think he's won. No, he hasn't won. He hasn't won anything.
Okay. Well, I remember reading.
Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz is a child rapist. He was statutorily raping Virginia Roberts. I've already written that in my book, The Clintons Warned Women. He did nothing. You understand that?
No, Dershowitz. I'm just stating for the record here that this is what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, you're running scared. There's no need to be scared.
I'm not running scared. I just do not have the wherewithal to deal with his lawsuits.
I'll tell you this. Virginia Roberts says he raped her, okay? You know, and she was definitely involved, being pandered to Epstein, to Prince Andrew. There's a picture of her within Prince Andrew over in England. How did she get there?
No, this is...
Because Ghislaine Maxwell... Yeah, so here's why it's being covered up, okay? Because the Clintons and Donald Trump both were compromised by Epstein.
Yes.
Definitely Trump. Bill Clinton definitely knew what was going on. They were both friends with, like, the biggest freaking sicko underage sex pervert you'd ever want to meet. Both political parties at the very top. Hillary Clinton, that's why it was not an issue in the 2016 campaign, Chuck, because Hillary couldn't talk about it because of Bill, and Trump couldn't talk about it because of what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, I agree that that's exactly what happened there. Absolutely. It's just, go ahead.
No, but you know, there are a lot of web links on Jeffrey Epstein, you know. And by the way, Alan Dershowitz used to fly on his, they found the flight records. Dershowitz says, I never was on Jeffrey Epstein's plane without my family. and then they found the flight records that proved he was lying. Alan Dershowitz says that I was just a lawyer for Jeffrey Epstein. We weren't close personal friends. Then they found articles where Alan Dershowitz 15 years ago was talking about what a great personal friend he is of Jeffrey Epstein, how much he just loved being with him, okay? And how, you know, Jeffrey Epstein would read Alan Dershowitz's manuscripts before he published a book. Isn't that precious, you know? So, that's what you're
Trump,
saying.
Yeah, and Trump even said he was a great guy, except he liked him young, apparently.
You can find Donald Trump. He's a wonderful guy. He's a great guy. He likes him kind of young, you know. Well, Trump was having sex with underage. He was telling these girls, hey, you look just like my daughter, Ivanka, who was age 12, before he rapes her.
Yikes.
So, you need to Google Ann Coulter's article at WorldNet Daily on Jeffrey Epstein, because she leaves out Trump. It's so intellectually dishonest for a woman who has had sex with Roger Stone to leave out the fact that Donald Trump is just as compromised or more so than Bill Clinton is with Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, but see, but that's the point of this whole thing, in my estimation, is that on both sides of the alleged aisle, because, you know, I'm not sure how much of a divide there is, it seems as though everybody's compromised. Everybody's getting paid by somebody they shouldn't be getting paid by. Everybody's, you know, under blackmail, and that's the only way you ascend. You know, it's only the most criminal of elements that get to, you know, the higher echelons of the government anyway at this point in time. And that's why I don't object to the term cacistocracy, where it seems like the worst of the worst are exactly who is allegedly in leadership. You know, I know there's a lot to it, but when I see people screaming that, you know, the QAnon morons that are telling me that, you know, Donald Trump is fighting the deep state, with what? You know, with what and where? They point to secret dossiers, sealed indictments that they claim will emerge. You know, they even want to tell you that JFK Jr. is still alive and working for them, and Mueller is secretly working on his side, all this stuff. I totally ignored the comments, by the way, from you guys during this show, but any of them that you want to email to me, first of all, I'll pass them along to Robert, and we will address them in the next show at the top of the show that I have him on, because it is an amazing set of stories that you could tell us about a lot of things. And meanwhile, I only really scratched the surface with Robert Morrow tonight. Next time we'll talk about the JFK assassination almost exclusively, but there's a lot of different directions I could go in with you.
Okay.
And I find this really interesting. You're a fascinating character. I'm not going to say that I agree with you on everything, or that I will agree with you on everything even in the future.
Sure.
But I got to say that you're definitely entertaining, and you come across as an honest guy who can have a discussion like a reasonable human being, which is funny because, you know, we talked about Roger Stone earlier. I have personally been witness to, like, when they came out and they said, oh, was Roger Stone threatening this other guy with his dog and everything else? I was like, well, isn't that, like, pretty much how he communicates? Because I've actually seen him sending emails to people that are way vulgar, way vile, a whole lot threatening. And it's a funny thing because people have brought it to the FBI and said,
well,
you know what?
Roger told me that he was going to take lighter fluid and pour it over the head of Andrea Skolnick and light a match. That's what he told me.
Well, you know, privately, just, I mean, I'm not going to disclose the contents, but he also threatened Joan Mellon at one point.
And he threatened Joan Mellon, too. And so he's a lowlife, and that's what I mean. Psychopaths make enemies. So I have to get one little plug in. So, folks, you can Google Ann Coulter's article. It's called Media Magic, How a Democrat Pedophile Became a Trump Scandal. It's an incredibly dishonest article because Jeffrey Epstein was an extremely close friend of Donald Trump for decades before Epstein and Bill Clinton were running around together in the year 2000. Donald Trump has known Jeffrey Epstein since 1987. He was going to his pedophile parties for years, years before Bill Clinton came into the Epstein scene. So it's an example how each political party is so dishonest with the facts.
That's right.
Okay, she's calling it Epstein a Democrat scandal. No, it's a elitist scandal.
That's right.
Crossing both parties. So anyhow, I'll leave it at that.
No, look, you're absolutely correct. Meanwhile, we didn't even talk about where people could go to, say, take a look at Robert Morrow's work. How about a plug for a website for you?
Well, you can hit me up on Twitter, and my new Twitter handle is DC Politics 2016. Just Google Robert Morrow, MORROW, or DC Politics 2016. You'll find me there, and I'll be glad to interact with you.
Well, there you go. And what I'll do is I actually see your new Twitter handle. I think I just hit the follow button over there. So I'm following him now on Twitter, and I'll give you guys the link to the Twitter handle as well. So that'll be included in the show notes. And, interact with Robert Morrow. Not telling you I know what the results will be, but I can tell you that it's not going to be boring.
As Bill Clinton would say, take care and God bless America, all right?
Oh, wow. I can't end a show any better than that. Robert Morrow was my guest here tonight on The Ocelli Effect. And, yes, I will provide links to all this stuff. And we will have a conversation again in the very near future. Robert Morrow, thank you so much for doing this with me. Okay, so up next will be Trans Resistor Radio here on Ocelli.com, but the Ocelli Effect is done, so remember this much at least. I am merely Ocelli. All of you who listen, participate, appear on the show, call in, whatever. You are actually the effect. Have a good night.